For the most part, individuals hunting and searching for their food went away with the arrival of things like city living and grocery stores. But foraging has never gone away completely, even in urban areas. And growing concerns about climate change and ensuring a reliable food supply are helping move the practice into the mainstream. KUOW's Joshua McNichols tells us about efforts in Seattle to encourage greater use of the food resources that are already growing in our neighborhoods.
Melanie Voraz-Herrera is about to break the law.
What are we looking at?
Nettles. Whole hillside of nettles.
She's harvesting stinging nettles from public property. That's illegal. We're in a neglected corner of Seattle's Golden Gardens Park. The forest floor is littered with beer cans. People pass through here on their way to the beach, just down the hill. But nobody stops here. Nobody except Melanie. And she's after something that almost nobody else would want. Every kid who ever went to summer camp around here has a story about falling into a patch of stinging nettles.
Isn't that amazing? I'm wearing rubber kitchen gloves and getting stung right through them.
But Herrera says stinging nettles are worth suffering for. They're free, they're super healthy, and once you get them back into the kitchen, nettles make great pesto.
Wow, look at how much it made.
Foragers like Herrera have always operated in cities, but on the fringes. Sometimes they're even seen as vandals. Melissa Poe is an environmental anthropologist who has studied urban foragers. She says we usually think of parks only as places for recreation.
So we go there for picnicking, we might ride a bicycle, or we might just enjoy a walk. So generally speaking, public properties aren't considered areas that are ripe for foraging.
But Poe says attitudes are changing. Los Angeles recently affirmed the right to harvest fruit on public land. Boston, Chicago, and Baltimore have planted public orchards. And foragers have played an important role in restoring a forest just outside Tokyo. They're all part of a shift in cities toward preparing for a more uncertain future. Climate change, extreme weather events, rising fuel prices, terrorist activity, they all threaten to disrupt the flow of food into urban areas.
We just had to cut off a major interstate for 2 weeks to Canada, and that's an important corridor which moves our food.
And that was just from a truck accident. So local leaders are looking to local resources to increase the resilience of their food supply. That means things like more urban gardens and farms, allowing chickens and small livestock back into the city limits, and foraging.
See right up there against the sky? Those are all figs.
Gail Savina stands under a fig tree on a quiet street in Seattle's Mount Baker neighborhood. The tree's owners are at work. They don't have time to harvest this fruit. Savina estimates there are 100,000 pounds of unharvested fruit on private and public land in Seattle. Last year, her organization City Fruit picked about a fifth of that. Plums, apples, cherries, and pears. The fruit went to local food banks. Savina says that increases the city's resilience. It also helps lower the city's carbon footprint.
When you fly up here from Chile to Seattle, you're going to burn a lot of fuel, and that's going to have a fairly significant impact on the climate. But if you pick the pear down the block, it's not going to have an impact on the climate.
Walk around the block with a forager, and the city starts to look like a grocery store. Lawns are spotted with salad greens, from fiery wild mustards to sweet first-year dandelion greens. A mysterious mushroom in a backyard turns out to be edible and highly prized. Young horsetail and bamboo shoots, invasive garden snails descended from French escargot. Even squirrels are fair game for some foragers. And foraging isn't an isolated activity anymore. It's a communal activity. Many in Seattle's Southeast Asian communities gather each fall to collect chestnuts from Queen Anne Boulevard's stately street trees. And a wildly enthusiastic group has planted a new food forest on public land in the city's Beacon Hill neighborhood. Still, the concern about environmental damage from foraging hasn't gone away. It remains illegal on much city property. Seattle Parks spokesperson Dewey Potter says there's a good reason.
We're engaged in a multi-million dollar effort to restore 2,500 acres of urban forest by the year 2025. And a tremendous amount of the work in that effort is being done by volunteers. And we had a situation where a newly restored area was stripped bare of its native plants by people foraging.
But Seattle's response to a few bad experiences like that has been to engage foragers, not crack down on them. City departments have been asked to take a look at their policies and to consider ways to allow food harvesting and even production on public land. Now, in some Seattle parks, Potter says rangers not only tolerate foraging, they actually teach foraging classes.
Because the more people understand about how the ecosystems work, the more respectful they will be of our parks.
The idea is that educated foragers can help protect public land. Groups like City Fruit help bring a level of stewardship to the trees they harvest from. And anthropologist Melissa Poe says most foragers end up returning to the same spots again and again.
It's a place where they know the entire plant population and what is valuable to them. And so they end up tending these areas.
For her part, forager Melanie Voris Herrera is careful not to over-harvest her favorite nettle patch. Back in her kitchen, she stuffs her stinging nettle pesto into the bellies of trout her husband Carlos caught in a nearby lake. Unlike some here in Seattle, Herrera is no newcomer to foraging. Over dinner, she tells me about her childhood, how she and the rest of her family had to forage for food, how it embarrassed her because it revealed their poverty. But she's rediscovered it as an adult. Now, like Melanie, many cities are also giving foraging a second look. And the result can be good for the climate, good for the cities, and delicious.
That's really good.
It's like the best pesto ever.
I'm Joshua McNichols for KUOW.
And Joshua McNichols is in our studio right now. Joshua, good morning.
Hi, Bill.
Joshua, you mentioned stinging nettles in a park are illegal, but what would life be in the Northwest if we couldn't pick blackberries on the side of the road?
I know. Many of us in Seattle consider it sort of our God-given right, but technically it is illegal in a Seattle park. They're not going to crack down or they'd face a huge backlash. But, you know, they do have this policy of saying that you should sample but not pick everything because then there's nothing left for anybody else.
Sample, don't denude.
Exactly.
So you ate some stuff you maybe never thought you would in Seattle?
Yeah, I never thought I would eat snails before.
Even in a restaurant?
Well, you know, you hear about French escargot, and it never was something that I got excited about until Melanie started rooting around and pulling out these big honking snails that they decimate my garden. So I've always thought of them as a pest, but I never thought to eat them.
I heard that nasturtiums are these spicy little good additions to a salad, and now we grow them in our yard, and we're on the my daughter and I are on the lookout for plants like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Not just the kinds of conventional plants you would see in your garden, but weeds like you would see in a person's lawn. Many of these are delicious. Some of them have a little bit of a bitter flavor, but it's kind of cultural that we reject that flavor.
Was there something in your foraging trip you would not eat?
Well, Melanie eats squirrel. And
she hunting them with firearms?
No, she sets out a cage. She watches the cage carefully for when the squirrel enters. And as soon as it enters, she takes the cage and sticks it in a bucket of water and drowns it. Now that, you know, she got a little bit of backlash for that, but she did a lot of research and her research suggested that was a quick, painless way for the animal to die. A lot of people also came out and said, hey, if you want local meat, this is as local as it gets. These squirrels are eating nuts and fruits from your yard. They're healthy, they're sustainable, and they are an invasive species. So why not eat them?
Now, in your piece, you mentioned a mysterious mushroom that turned out to be edible, but isn't it a little dangerous just hoping something works out?
Well, that's why it's great to go around first with a mentor, with somebody who really knows the landscape. And, you know, it's amazing when I walk around with Melanie, you walk around perceiving all these different flavors that you'd never experienced before. And after walking around with Melanie, I'm starting to perceive the world through taste in a different way. I'm starting to walk down the sidewalk and just pull things off bushes and eat them.
Now I want to go with you. KUOW's Joshua McNichols. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bill.